We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. This week I'm chatting with Nicole Block, the owner of The Nick Studio, a stationery design and illustration studio in Brooklyn, New York. She's also the founder of Tiles, which is a line of sophisticated, removable wall decor that are made out of cut vinyl. Nick and I first met on Twitter back in 2009, and she's been a part of the TSBC community since we started in 2011. On today's episode, Nicole shares how her life inspires her work, the benefits of getting a workplace outside of her home, and the logistical challenges she faced when creating a new product category, including how she was turned down by more than 75 manufacturers that she approached to help her make tiles. Hey, Nicole, so great to have you.
Hi, Katie.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Of course. So tell us about your career path. Your business has changed throughout the years, where you're focusing has changed throughout the years based on different interests and opportunities that have come your way. So tell us, where did you start and tell us where you are now?
Well, yeah, I went to school for illustration, graduated in 2000 with a degree in illustration and thought I was going to be a freelance illustrator. And after about 6 months of trying that, I said, oh, this is not going to happen. So I had other jobs, of course, at the same time and eventually became a magazine designer randomly.
So cool.
And self-taught. And I just kind of fell into it and worked at a youth publication for 4.5 years. And during my time there, I really learned how to do all of that really intense publishing work. And we had to do all of our own production. So I had to learn everything top to bottom. And I art directed the publication. And at the same time, I was still doing illustration and a lot of caricatures and stuff like that. And
wow,
when we got married, I did everything for my wedding. And of course, as it goes, every designer or, creative that does stuff for their own wedding says, I'm just going to go do wedding stuff now. And so I started doing that on the side for fun and a little bit of extra cash. And then our magazine got dissolved randomly out of nowhere about... Oh, yeah, wow. I think it was 11 years ago, this past September. And we were all sort of stunned and I didn't know what to do. And basically I went, maybe I'll just do this whole stationery thing. And so it was sort of baptism by fire. I just decided the next week to get a website and get things going and, started doing winning stationery from there. And then everything else just kind of follows.
I love how you say, yeah, I just decided to get a website. Like, no big deal.
I was young. I was 27. I was like, this is just what you do, right? You just get a website and you have a business and that's all you need to do. And well, of course, I was wrong, but.
No, and I'm not. No, I love the grit behind it. I love the optimism and the. I felt the same way when I started my business. Well, this is just what I do. I like this, one step, then two steps or whatever. And you just make it work. Even if you don't know how to do it at the beginning, you figure it out.
Right. Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah. There were a lot of changes where I started in wedding stationery became a very different place than where I went to with it. And mm-hmm. then eventually my card line and then eventually my tiles product. But it started from, where I knew. I knew basic wedding stuff. I had some clients, so I had a portfolio at that point. And I knew what people were looking for in trends, which is kind of funny because I'm very anti-trend. But at the time, I was like, well, this is trend stuff and I'll do that. And then it had to change a lot over time, especially after the bottom fell out of the market. In 2008 and 2009. And then all of a sudden I had no clients anymore. And I realized I had to make changes from there.
So that was about the time you transitioned to your wholesale line and your more off-the-shelf greeting cards. Is that correct?
Well, it started with changing my wedding stationery first. I went from doing whatever a client asked me to do to realizing that if I wanted to stay and get clients and get work, I had to make it more about what I could do for the client. So it was more about my illustration. And after a year doing that, I decided to throw myself into the greeting card end of things and wholesale. And I think my first show was 2011.
Yeah, I think so. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. After meeting all of you people on Twitter and all of that stuff.
I know. It's so fun. It's so fun to think back. I talk a lot about that actually, and the evolution of social media and how at one time we were all hanging out on Twitter, and so a lot of people still are. I don't mean to discredit it, but you know, a lot of my industry best friends and colleagues and you and everybody else, like we met on Twitter because we were all working on the same kind of stuff together, working it out.
A lot of late nights on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Or like it was still your late night and I was just getting started with my late night on the West Coast. And it was like, all right, would it catch me up before you head off to bed?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But anyhow, well, you, I must say your illustration style is so distinct and unique and beautiful. And I really think that is something a lot of people struggle with, actually creating their own unique aesthetic. And yet yours has flowed. It's from the outside, it seems like it has flowed so naturally to you. Like everything you've produced, whether it be wedding or greeting cards, it definitely had a very cohesive feel to it, mostly because it came from your own head and your own illustration style. Like, how did you evolve that as your, you know, the products you were offering changed?
I think that when I started doing it with my wedding stationery, the first thing I thought of was how it was going to be produced, especially if it was going to be a letterpress suite, something like that. It needed to be simple. It needed to be linear. By nature, I tend to paint and do things full color, but since I had spent so many years as a designer and doing production, I knew that I couldn't do that with my stationery work. So I started doing more linear designs and illustrations. And from there, it just sort of evolved. So by the time I got to the greeting cards, even though all of my cards are done digitally, the line that I started with was just a continuation of that linear concept, especially because I wasn't sure exactly where I wanted it to go. And I didn't know if maybe eventually one day I would want to do a letterpress line. You know, I wanted to have everything sort of in place for that. So it was a practical choice at first, but that's just the drawing style. Everything else and where the subject matter comes from is really focused around the little things that I see or that people experience. I always wanted to evoke that sort of small moment idea rather than just broad concepts, which is probably not the best move business-wise, but you know,
I'm sitting here shaking my head yes, because I think, I mean, you hear the business guru saying you need to niche down to really like hit your core audience or whatever, but I think it's the small moments that we need more products around. You know, I mean, the empathy cards, the sympathy cards that have been coming out in the market the last couple of years, those have been going gangbusters because there was a need for it. And I think there's a lot of value in focusing on the small moments and not just worrying about the birthday and the anniversary and, you know, the holiday or whatever it is that you're focused on.
It's a hard give and take. And I say this because going back to what I was saying before about being allergic to trend, I sort of see a trend and I run in the other direction, which really is not, you know, ideally business-wise, you should do something in between. You should see a trend and try to find a way for your style and your thought process to sort of go with that trend, you know, instead of running away from it and instead of fully joining it, you know, sort of make your own pocket in there. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes I don't. Oftentimes I just go, well, you know, everybody's going to be doing that. Nobody wants that anymore. I'm going to do this random thing that, you know, nobody ever thinks about. And it's hard sometimes when you do that. Your things don't necessarily jump off the shelves if people have to think about them.
Well, there's an educational process to it. Yeah. There's that whole, here's what it is and here's how you use it and here's what it's for. Aside from just, you know, I mean, greeting cards a little more self-explanatory, but you do sometimes need to explain the sentiment behind it or the reason.
You do. So, I mean, things have evolved over the years and I've realized how to do it better and within my style, but it takes a while. Sometimes you forget that you're not just creating things that you like. You have to remember that there's an audience out there that also has to like what you do. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I've been jotting down little quotes here and there that you've said that I think really resonate with our audience. So thank you. Let's talk about your second business, Tiles, if you're okay talking about it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So tell us what Tiles is, and then I'd love to kind of dive a little deeper as to what motivated you to start this company.
Okay, so Tiles is wall decor product. It's made from cut vinyl. It's designed in the spirit of tile, but it's not meant to look like tile. It's sort of a unique product. It's totally temporary. It has no background, so you could put it on whatever wall, color, or material. It'll go on any smooth surface, and you change the wall color or you change the material and you change the whole look of the pattern. So
the photos you've posted on Instagram and social media elsewhere, they're so incredible to see the before and afters of different spaces and how, you know, this temporary solution can transform the way it looks. I mean, what motivated you to start this? How did this all come about?
So like everything else, like every, you know, wedding designer that started from their own wedding, this started from my own house. So I needed something for my backsplash. We are lucky enough to own our apartment, but after renovating a lot of it, we got to the kitchen and we ran out of time. We ran out of money. And I am sort of the person that I can't really feel like anything is done until it's all done in some way, shape, or form, at least, even if it's just a temporary done. And so my son's first birthday party was coming up and we were going to have everybody over the house. And I didn't want everybody seeing my plain white walls on my backsplash. So I was trying to think of something that I could put up and then I could take down, because the goal was eventually we would actually tile the backsplash. And I ran through all of my options and realized that I had a vinyl guy that I knew from doing the trade shows, and that might actually work on a backsplash, but I wasn't sure. So I emailed him and asked him if it would stand up to the heat and the water. And he said he thought so. So I drew out what kind of look like a Moroccan tile design. And I, you know, specify the colors and I told him what I wanted him to do. And he got it back to me and I put it up. And I took photos of the process because I was like, I think this is going to be cool. And it turned out so well. I sent it to Apartment Therapy. They ran it as a DIY story. And it got, you know, a lot of attention and over 1,000 likes. And they kept rerunning it, you know, over the next like couple of years. And I thought, well, this doesn't exist. I couldn't find it anywhere. It wasn't available. And so why don't I do something like this and see if I can make it into something? And so, yeah, so that's how it was born. And I just kind of fooled around with it for a little while and then eventually decided to actually make it a product and put it out there, found a vendor and, you know, figured all out, you know, the packaging and the branding and all that stuff. And yeah. So
I was going to say, you know, you are essentially creating a whole new product line for also a new market.
Yeah.
So I want to start by asking, what was the transition like moving from more of the paper product world into home decor? Was that scary or exciting? Or
I thought it was super exciting because I'm, you know, I love everything that has to do with design. I love working on our home and I love picking out decor stuff. And one of my best friends is an interior designer here in New York. And so I was really excited. And then the reality of it hits you all, and stationery and design in general, I feel like graphic design, that is very casual. You know, it's a lot of very friendly relationships, and stationery is very unique in that, you know, we all sort of build each other up and we refer buyers to other people and, you know, we're very supportive. It's a rare community. But it's also a very chill community, and the interior design community is not, it's very, I mean, there are great people there too, of course, but it's a little bit more competitive. It's a little bit more of a see and be seen situation. Yeah. So I have to, look the part. I have to act the part. Everything about my brand has to reflect the zone in which I'm selling. Like, it can't look crafty, and it can't look too casual, because then it's going to sell low. I have to sell it at the right price point. So it has to look expensive. It has to have a more expensive, luxurious feel to everything about it, the photos and the branding and of course the product, but the product I wasn't worried about. It's everything else that goes into it. And it's a lot. It's a very big change. And I like it. And I don't mind dressing up, and I don't mind, you know, having meetings with fancy people. Right. But, you know, at the same time, it's, you know, it's kind of nice to just hang out in jeans and a t-shirt and, you know, do business that way too. So I think I fall somewhere in between. Yeah. Still try to get my bearings on that one.
Well, I assume that part of it is too, just getting to know the lay of the land in a different industry. You know, yes, it's a product based, or it's a physical product rather than a service, but at the same time, it's a totally different industry, and
yeah,
there's different people to know and processes and standards and all the different things. So I imagine, as exciting as it was also a little bit nerve-wracking too, entering something unknown.
Yeah, it definitely was. I didn't know a lot. I mean, I didn't know how interior designers would respond. I didn't know how the different aspects of the industry would work with it. I didn't know, you know, I had experience obviously with wholesale, but I didn't know how to wholesale this to stores in a way that made sense.
Right.
And that's still something that I'm working on, because it's a product that needs to be explained. And that's a hard thing to do when you're not selling in a physical store yourself, where you can explain it to people coming in. And so,
right.
You know, so yeah, so I'm still working on all of that. And yeah, it's a journey.
This whole entrepreneurial journey is truly a journey. I agree with you. I feel like every day I'm learning something new, or saying, "Huh, maybe I shouldn't be doing it that way. No. Maybe I should be doing it differently."
No.
So I'm right there with you. But I would also like to dive into a little bit of, you know, it's really hard to create a new product category. I mean, you were creating something that, one, you needed, and so you knew you could go to your vinyl guy, but to do something in more of, I don't want to call it mass market because it's not, but like more in a larger scale where you're having to produce this in larger quantities and think about packaging and all this, that's a major undertaking.
Yes.
How, you know, what were some of the challenges you faced when creating this product, and how did you go about finding sources to scale this thing so you weren't just kind of doing one-off projects with your vendor guy, with your vinyl?
Yeah,
guy.
Well, that was really what it was. I knew I couldn't do it with the vinyl source that I had. And so, you know, I felt confident that I knew what I needed to ask for. I knew the product that I wanted to use, the specific type of vinyl that I wanted to use. And I knew what I needed to request, what size I wanted to go for, all of that. But I was turned down by no less than, I want to say 100, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was more like 75 vinyl vendors in this country. I was trying to keep it local.
Wow.
I wasn't ready to go overseas yet, because you need to produce in such large quantities, and I'm not in that place yet. So I wanted to keep it in the States, and so many people turned me down. I realized this is why nobody was making this product, because nobody could get it made.
Well, and so because, you know, a lot of people that listen to this podcast are just getting started in their product-based business, and they're thinking about new things that they want to create. I mean, was it good old-fashioned Googling and asking your friends for references for these 75 vendors that you reached out to?
Yeah, I mean, nobody had any references, which was the problem. Everybody had a local vinyl signage place, and the small-scale vinyl places were not going to do it for me. I realized that very quickly. Nobody had the capacity or the manpower. And the thing that I'm asking for, the reason that it's different is because it's, except for the machines cutting the vinyl, everything else is done by hand. So you actually need manpower and you need space in order to make this. And that was not an easy place to find. It's the difference between, you know, a small letterpress shop and a major handler, you know, they're two completely different animals. And I needed the big guys, and I could not find any that would take me on. And finally, I wound up, I was looking for commercial level vinyl printers, and I wound up at a place in California. So obviously on the other coast, but they're awesome. And they took me on, and we've made adjustments along the way. And, you know, and it's still a lot for them, even though I know they can handle it. It's still a big job for them. And so I don't know how long I'll be able to keep it moving with them. But I'd like to stay with them. I'd like to stay in the States. You just have to remember that, you know, you can't force something to happen, especially if you're creating a completely new product. That's a hard thing to make work. And you have to be willing to do a lot of, you know, trial and error and spend some money, not necessarily that much money, but some money trying to get the product right and find the right fit for you. But it took a lot of time. It took months and months to find the right person. So
two things that I'd like to reiterate that you just mentioned that I think are super important are the willingness to tweak as you go. I think that's super duper important for all of us in business. And the second thing is the idea of samples and getting samples from the people that you work with, and just until you get that product the way you want it, you want to make sure that you can see it in real life before you place those large orders.
Yeah, so for sure. I needed to make sure it suited what I needed from the product for the user end of things. And at the same time, I needed to make sure it suited their workflow. Both of those things needed to meet somewhere in the middle. So the sampling was definitely necessary. And I needed to know that they could produce really high quality pieces over and over again, because nobody can get a bad piece in a set. It's not going to work out for my business that way. So
right. Well, and you have standards and expectations of yourself and the product you put out in the world. So you want to make sure that your vendors, your partners, your manufacturers are on board with that same thing and can produce that same high quality that you're expecting.
So, yeah, I agree.
So you and your husband, I want to switch gears a little bit here. You and your husband are both entrepreneurs, and you somewhat recently moved into a studio space. A lot of our listeners work from home and are kind of grappling with whether or not to invest in a space outside of their home. So I'd love for you to talk about what were some of the considerations you had when making this decision to move your business away from your, you know, home.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we live in Brooklyn, so obviously it's very expensive here to live and to have a workspace. And, you know, we're fortunate in that we have a large apartment. So when we both decided to start working from home, I was already working from home, but Dave decided to go out on his own just after we had our second kid. And we did not have the means to do anything outside of the house at that point. So what we did was we converted our master bedroom, which is a large space, into our studio. And we moved into an 8x10 small side room that's not really quite a bedroom, and slept in there for 4 years. And it wasn't until our youngest started at public school, so we didn't have to do school payments every month, that we realized we could move out. And the other consideration was that Dave is a product designer, and he needs a good space for people to come by and have meetings with him. And, you know, the meeting space doesn't have to be large or fancy. We can rent a meeting space for that if we need to. It's really about people being able to see where he works and what he does. And having people come to our home for him was a bummer. Didn't bother my clients, but it bothered his. So we needed to get something outside of that. So we had a budget, which is hard to stick by, but we found something that suited our budget. We outfitted it as inexpensively as we possibly could. Yay, IKEA. And we've been working on it a little bit since then, you know, on and off, but it's been a year. It's 400 square feet of space, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for, once again, for where we live, it's a nice big space. And it's mm-hmm. bigger than our 220 square feet that we had at our master bedroom. So it's okay. And and we love it. It's great for having a more professional space and a place for clients to come to. But then it's also great for separating our work and home life, or at least as much as we can. We still bring home work. We still work from mm-hmm. home sometimes. But overall, it's a really nice way to have a separate work and home life. And we just, at the end of the day, I close shop, I come home, I do all the family things. And yeah.
That's what I work from my home office. My office is actually in our converted garage. So I do have a little bit of physical separation there, and that, you know, I'm not in the main house.
Right.
The main house. It sounds like we have this mansion. No, but we do not.
The north wing. I'm not just the north wing.
Yeah, well, sorry. That's our three-bedroom, two-bath house, which is very lovely but not huge. But I still have to, you know, like I need to go into the house to use the restroom or to go into the kitchen to make my lunch or whatever it is. And in that process, I see the breakfast dishes that have not yet been done, or like, oh, I should start that load of laundry or whatever it is, you know, all these different things that are running through our head throughout the day. And I sometimes wonder if I should be investing in outside space as well, because, you know, then I could have that separation, and maybe then I'd be more focused when I'm doing my work. And when I'm home, I can be more focused on family and all the things that need to be done here. Have you felt that? It sounds like you may have felt the, some of that same relief.
Oh, yeah.
By having that.
Oh, yeah. It's because I'm the exact same way. And I know you and I have talked about this before, but I walk out and I see, you know, whatever clothes have been left out by the kids, or this mess or that mess, or the dishes need to be done, or the bathroom needs to be cleaned, or the lunch. Like, even today, I'm taking this call from home because I had two other calls and it was going to be quieter in the house. So I mm-hmm. stayed home to work today, and I'm already thinking, well, I'm home and I do have to do laundry. So maybe I'll just do laundry earlier in the day before the kids get home. And they're like, why do I do that to myself? Because when you're home, and especially when you're home and you have children, it's really easy to get wrapped up in all of that household stuff. And being outside of the house, it demands that I get that all out of my head. Even if I'm doing other stuff, mm-hmm. you know, buying things for the kids or, you know, whatever online while I'm at the office, it's a small snippet of my day rather than the entire day getting distracted by all the other things I need to do. So,
yeah. I think it's more even just me moving out of our house, like from our kitchen table, so to speak, into this converting our garage for this. That's created a separation that's made me much more productive too. So,
and it's so cute.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, let's talk about general advice you have. Like, if you were to sit down with somebody for coffee that wants to get into making products for their, you know, and start a product-based business, what advice would you give them?
Oh, well, I would give them the advice that I did not take for a long time. I'm just really learning from, which is, if you're not a natural marketer for your product, that you need to either learn fast or bring somebody, a contractor, on board that can help you with that. And it's something that I've been struggling with, maybe not as much when I did stationary, but if I have been doing gift or now that I'm doing the tiles work, it's a lot of marketing that, since you're marketing from online and you're dealing with such a crowded space, you need to find a way to get your information out there and get your product out there. And if you don't, then you're just sort of treading water. And I'm learning that the hard way now, and I'm getting PR people on board to help me out with that. But, you know, as much as I believe in my product and I love my product and I talk to everybody about my product, it's just not in me to know how to exactly reach out to people from, you know, social media or, you know, from the other side of my computer
or whatever it
is. Yeah, and get it out there. Yeah.
Well, I will say it is so hard. I actually was just I was jotting down to talk about this on a mini episode about like how to pitch yourself. And we always, as entrepreneurs, we have to put ourselves out there, whether we're pitching the press, whether we're pitching people to buy our products, whether we're trying to work with sales reps, you know, get on a podcast, whatever it is. Like, we're always having to put ourselves out there. And for a lot of us, it's not comfortable to do that. And so I really applaud you for, one, recognizing an area that you – I don't want to say weak because that implies that you're not good. But, like, it's – you have strength – you have strengths in other places. And so let's, you know, find somebody to help you where you need – you know, where you could be doing better. Like, leverage their strengths for your own strengths.
Yeah, so, exactly. You can't be good at everything. No. And I can come up with a product. I can do my own branding. I can figure out where I sit in the market. All of that stuff is easy and makes sense to me. When it comes to actually, you know, for lack of a better word, peddling my product, I kind of suck at it. And that's, you know, it's okay, except I have to sell my product. So unless I'm right in front of somebody, I do great at a trade show because I can talk to anyone. But if that's not the case on a daily basis, which of course it's not, then I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get it across. Yeah. And then I freeze up because I don't know how to go from there. Mm-hmm. So I need to bring somebody on. And I just had someone, I'm transitioning to look for someone else right now. But and that's another thing too. Sometimes that takes trial and error as well. You gotta, you know, work with some people for a little while to see if they're a good fit. But I'm not good at it. And that's okay. I need to figure out how to make my strengths work for my brand and then find somebody else to do the other stuff. So
absolutely. I agree. That was something that took me a long time to learn too. And I feel like I'm still refining it. You know, I also think I'm curious. So I like to learn about new things and I like to learn how things work. But at the same time, building a website is not my strength. So therefore, I don't need to be building that website. You know, it's like, so there is a balance between curiosity, but also practical, like practically, how can we make this work without, you know, in the best possible way that it's going to be, it's going to lead to the best end result.
So. Yeah. And frankly, for me, what it really comes down to too is that, as a business person, as a human being, I'm not money driven. As a business person, that does not help me. So I need to have somebody who can actually, you know, have a target and get me to where I need to get to, because frankly, I want this to succeed. But I want it to succeed for different reasons and, you know, and their personal reasons. So I need the other half of me, that business person, that marketing person, to say, you know, this is how we're going to handle this. And this is where you need to be.
Well, and two, you know me, I'm a big fan of like setting goals, and that includes financial goals as well as just some like life quality goals, you know? And I mean, it's always when we're setting our goals for different programs we're launching, it's always, okay, how many people do we want to help? Like, I always phrase it in that way. Not how many tickets do we want to sell, but how many people do we want to help? How many can we help in a way for this to make it the best experience for everybody? And so I think you do need to know those numbers. We're running businesses here, not hobbies. But at the same time too, I like that you're looking at it from the frame of mind of how many people can I help, and you know, how can I make this business successful for my own reasons? So
My happiest moments are when I see, you know, the completed work, my actual product up on somebody's walls where it just looks so amazing. Right. And I'm just so like, I'm patting myself on the back because I know I did that right. I did something really, really good there. So that's what I want to do. And the money thing obviously is necessary, but it's not what drives me. And so I need that other person that can help me move that part forward. Because otherwise I stall out. I just want to like go for free and plaster it on everybody's walls. But that's not a good thought, you know? So.
Oh, I love that. Because I think we've all been there and can all relate to. It sounds so fun. I want to do that for everybody. But,
It looks so good. I mean, why wouldn't you want that up on the walls? Let me do it for you.
Right, exactly. So Nick, what's next for you and your businesses?
That's a really good question. I never really know. I like to remember that I like to do a lot of things and they're all creative, and I want to stay focused on my main target, which is tiles, but I still make room for other things. So I'm working on some illustrations for a book for Random House right now. I just, I have a whole bunch of wedding clients. I don't know how they keep finding me, but they keep coming and I keep getting fun projects. So I don't say no. And I, you know, as far as tiles goes, I just did an event with Interior Design Magazine at their offices. So that was a lot of fun. So I, you know, I always feel like I want to keep that momentum moving forward. And I'm going to try and suck up my fears about watching myself on video and do more videos because I think that's necessary. And I,
oh, it'd be so great for tiles too.
Yeah. I know. I just sort of had my epiphany of, okay, you just really need to get over watching yourself right now and just do it. So that's what's next on my agenda.
Well, if I can offer any advice there, I felt the same way about a podcast and listening to myself back. And I feel the same way when I see myself on video. I know that I'm not like, it's not the perfect video, but I'm like, you know what? Again, done is better than perfect. Let me just get this out in the world because hopefully it'll help somebody.
Yeah, I need to get over my vanity and nobody really cares what, you know, what I look like except me anyway. They only want to know about the product and I sort of need to get over that.
But it's so scary. So don't sell yourself short there. It is scary to put yourself out in that way. So
It is. I think I have to treat it like I'm talking to a real human being, which I never have a problem doing. So if I can do that, then I can keep going with it. So
awesome. Well, I can't wait to see the videos when they're ready.
I'll let you know.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Oh, one last question. Where can people find you online? We'll include these in the show notes too so they can click through.
Okay. You can find the majority of my work on my main site, which is thenickstudio.com. That's N-I-C studio. And Tiles is on tiles.co, which is T-Y-L-E-S.co. Excellent. And I'm at Tiles Co. or Nick Studio everywhere. So
awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing about your journey in business. It was really fun hearing, and thanks for sharing all your wisdom.
Sure. Oh, wisdom. Thank you.
It was a lot of good input. So thank you.
Sure.
Hey, friends, a little fun fact for you today. Did you know that most of the brands that we interview here on this podcast are Trade Show Bootcamp alumni? Some of them are speakers and some are friends, but the large majority of the people I've talked to on this podcast are alumni. They have come through and attended our Paper Camp conference or our Paper Camp e-course. And both of these programs are aimed at helping stationery gift companies launch or refine their wholesale program. So we talk about everything from developing their product and ensuring it's ready for wholesale to launching it to the market and working with sales reps, getting in front of buyers, and all the way down to exhibiting at trade shows, wholesale trade shows, similar to New York Now and the National Stationery Show. We cover it all because we want you to be educated and informed in how you're making decisions for your business. Now, many of you have been asking, when's the next program? When is Paper Camp going to run again? And I'm excited to tell you that we opened registration for our 2018 program. Paper Camp Conference is only going to run once in 2018, and the dates are March 1st and 2nd, and will be in Los Angeles. Historically, I've run this program twice a year for the last several years, but I'm cooking up some other fun things for the fall, so we are only going to offer Paper Camp in person and live one time in 2018. And if you want to get more information about how the live program compares with our e-course program, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp and you can learn more and also grab your seat. Now, I should mention, like all of our Paper Camp conferences, this is an intimate event. We keep the numbers small so that you can get your questions answered and you can have time networking with our speakers as well as the other attendees. So seats are very limited and we sell out every time. And since we're only offering this once next year, I really encourage you to grab your seat if you intend on coming. More information is available at tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.